to be famous? Who wants to die for art?
You disgusting hippie pig.
What are we alive for except to grab all the kicks we can? To contaminate our society. Come join the fun.
Podcasting live from your favorite studio inside a bedroom, I am the Reverend Rory Dowd, and this is the worst little podcast in the world. I am joined this week by my good friends Nick Ramirez, Dogwater Dick, and the intern. Also in studio, we have Alan, Tom, and Dr. Davis from iMirage Studios here.
On the worst little podcast, we're talking out of our ass.
Yeah,
that was good.
Not bad.
Last week was better, and we didn't mention it. It's always fun when we don't mention how well I do.
Yeah, it was better last week because we didn't mention it. It's like, you know, after 10 in a row where you mention it every time.
Thanks, Rick.
Well, I feel like it's going to set the mood for the entire show.
That's true.
And now we know the entire show is going to be just a touch late.
Well, we are starting late this week, so it is kind of apropos. Not that it matters to you out there in interwebs land.
The recent past is more future than it normally would be.
What?
Wow.
Right.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. Thank you for joining us once again on a fine, the first week of fall.
Yeah. Fall is here.
And we had a nice little thunderstorm on the first day of fall, and temperatures have dropped accordingly. So start busting out your winter clothes, because in the next 2 weeks, it's going to get really cold and wet, and you won't like it. Just in time for Halloween. So all those awesome Halloween costume ideas you have, forget them. think layers. I have to remind myself every year.
Layered zombies for the walk.
Right.
Yeah.
The zombie walk brought to you by our good friend Ed Adkins. Yep. We're going to be talking more about that in the next couple weeks. I think this year they've got like, 40-plus venues or something that are part of the crawl. It's still only $5 for a cup. Only $5. So we'll have a list of all the locations you can expect to get cups at. There'll probably be a lot of the usual. You'll know where to go. If it's a bar you like going to and it's near Midtown or downtown, I'm sure it's involved.
But bring a flask because you're going to be waiting in lines all night long.
Bring a flask to drink of while you wait.
Says the non-drinker in the back room.
I made the mistake of just trying to go out to hang out at a few bars on the Santa Crawl, and what a miserable night that was. And
a non-drinker?
They were everywhere.
Yeah.
Can't get away from it.
It's crazy.
It's terrible. And yeah, zombies just
bad. Well, I think most
But it's a lot of fun if you bring a flask.
Most of the zombies this year can be found at the Apple Store. Camped out in front.
Right.
That's so sad.
Well, yeah, I mean, there were a lot of people. I mean, I'm sorry. I grew up with Star Wars. I grew up with people camping out for nerd events, like entertainment value things. Mm-hmm. But to camp out for a phone? Really? like it's not going to be there tomorrow, or you're going to lose social prestige because you don't have one the very next day.
Let's be honest. It's going to be better if you wait.
Right.
Totally.
And when
will
they get
work
the
better.
Bugs and patches. Yeah.
Don't be a sucker.
Well, it's all the people who buy it at the very beginning who make it better for all the rest of us.
I mean, thank you guys.
Yeah. Thank the 1%.
Yeah, consumer bug hunting. It's consumer beta tasting.
God bless them all.
Because let's get it out on time. Who cares if it works right?
No kidding.
Whatever. That has nothing to do with Reno or this show. We've got a great big show. If you'll remember, last year we had Tom in talking about his own musical history here in Reno. We talked a lot about the granny years.
Mm-hmm.
This year we're going to, I guess, pick up where we left off. And last year we had a 3-hour show. Really hope that's not going to be the case this year. Well, more so, Nick hope it's not going to be the case because he has to be up at 4:30 in the morning.
That's I would right. just like to say, knowing what's coming up, Tom brought more tracks than he brought last time, not less.
But better to be overprepared.
More editing on the fly this time.
But I loved everything we did last time. And for those of you who didn't hear, go back and listen to that show before you listen to this show, or you won't know what's going on.
That's one of the
two-parter. We had a side A and a side B, and Rick even threw the record sound on of the record flipping.
That's right.
That's right. That's right. That was awesome.
It was pretty cool. Nice
well, and it was rad because on the show
of the mind.
On the show, we talked about like what would be a good song to start side two and what would be a good song to end side one, and they were good songs.
They were.
It was perfect.
Yeah, it was great. Yes. Yeah.
I was,
good choice. Good
little
choice.
Audio nerd moment there for me. Okay.
So I'm just going to real quick, last weekend I went to some shows, saw some bands, saw some DJs, supported the scene, paid some covers, bought some drinks. Like we all should be doing every weekend if you're a fan of music and entertainment here in Reno.
And you're not working.
Amen. And you're not working, yeah. And if you are working, well, I don't know, quit your job. Go to a show. Oh, what about you, Nick? You don't have much to talk about either.
No, I can't tell a lot, but I will say I was out on location for the Nowhere Nevada movie.
Can I say where?
Sure.
Back in the Middle Gate.
Yeah, back out in Middle Gate where there's a lot of interesting folks and characters out there. Really cool people.
The real Nevada.
It's pretty fun out there and beautiful. And yeah. I just feel blessed to have had these experiences so far, and it's hopefully going to be a great movie.
It'd be nice to actually see some footage, like the footage I'm in. That'd be cool.
Yeah. No, you have a little dance number. Yeah. That's hot stuff.
You dance?
No. Yes, but I do
did.
In the movie.
He did.
And
did.
Tom, he doesn't play guitar,
and I was,
too.
I was better than Dundas.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Possibly, yeah.
Yeah.
And was it like so. The little You're Twin Peaks midget dance? Or?
I can't really talk too much okay, about it. It's a little sexy. It's a little awkward.
As it should be.
It's going to be interesting.
How was your weekend, Rick, speaking of sexy and awkward?
Yeah.
Oh, sexy and awkward.
Good segue.
Dude, I started hanging out with one of my exes, and we went to Virginia City.
Really?
Yeah. And then I didn't get laid.
L-L?
No,
the nickname
no.
starts with L?
No, no, he's still with the new guy.
Oh.
No. It was David moved back to town.
Like David is pissed?
Yes, David is pissed. David, oh. And I keep telling people David from Is Pissed Off fame. Yeah.
You're talking to that guy?
Yes.
The crazy one?
Oh, yes. No, he's actually, I've seen him a number of times. He's mellowed out a whole lot since he quit.
Man,
the
I wish
tweet.
You had that tape just to play for Tom right
he's
now.
He's sober.
I have it in my car.
I do have that tape.
I have the CD in my car.
Do you have it triggered up?
Well, do you want to hear? You don't want to hear that. You don't want to hear the song.
The whole thing.
No,
we don't want to play the whole
short
song.
Version.
I could just play the, and I could just play the. I actually just have the message.
So let's. I want to set this up for anybody who hasn't heard the story before, and you guys in the room looking blank at me. A number of years ago, while Rick and I were roommates, he met a guy at a bar, and they started hanging out for a while, and it was. I don't know, alcohol-fueled and sexy and fun and a lot of emotions. And one night, David got mad and left a phone message for Rick that Rick saved on cassette, a little tiny cassette. He saved it for years. Finally got it over to digital, was screwing around with his Korg and the Acid Pro and all that stuff.
Okay,
and,
okay.
Well, don't go into that much.
Made an awesome dance tune out of it.
Yeah. That's pretty,
but we're not going to play
cool.
that. We're just going to – let's have a tiny clip of the actual first message.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, this is not that.
You know what, Rick? You're a fucking prick. And you know what? I hope you end up a fucking lonely-ass, sorry-ass queen by yourself. Because you know what? You're sorry. You really are. You know what? You're fucking sad, dude. And I hope you fucking die by yourself.
Oh, isn't that lovely?
Oh, with God. Your little chihuahua dog.
So you guys were hanging out this weekend, huh?
Yes, no, and just for everybody.
Oh, that's awesome.
That was 15 years ago, and he was in a blackout.
You'll have to say hi to him for me.
Oh, he's doing so good, and he looks great, and we had a fucking blast.
Cool.
Yeah, and I saw him at Pride like about 10 years ago even, and he was totally different guy, had his shit together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's 15 years older, but still 5 years younger than me.
So. Yeah.
All right.
Cradle robber. So
now stop that.
Oh, wait, no, wait, that's me. I married a girl 10 years younger than me.
Oh. And so, Rory, you're going to be taking off. Maybe you want to tell people what's coming up this weekend.
Yeah, I am. I do have to run off since we've got a late start. I got to get down to the open mic at the Jub Jubs that you should be at every freaking week because it's
Monday.
Awesome. We've been having a really good time. I don't know who's hosting next week, but tonight I know it's Maddie Wage.
I got my drum set up, Tom.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Just yeah. go down and hit them.
Yeah, we leave the drums out, and sometimes there's a bass around, and it's real jammy.
Really? That's great.
It's a good time. So any of you people out there looking to start a band or you got a new band, please come bring your skills and your music down to the Jub Jub Open Mic. 9:30 sign up, 10 o'clock start, and we have a good time for the late night for those of us not willing to let the weekend get put to bed.
Nice. Yeah.
Nice.
But coming up this weekend, we do have two really, really big, awesome events that, yeah, we'll just knock out of the way right now. Just remind people at the end of the show, too.
I will try.
First off, on Friday night at Jub Jub's also, we are going to be having a benefit show for Spike Jackson and Erica, or Spike Erica and Jackson. A couple months back, if you know Spike and Erica, they had their home broken into. They had a bunch of electronics stolen. Spike and Jackson's guitars were all stolen. And then they also stole the car keys. Came back the next day and stole Spike's truck.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
I heard they nabbed their wedding rings, too, which is really,
yeah.
really
fucked Yeah, yeah, yeah.
up.
Wow.
Yeah, no, just a lot of there's a lot of personal stuff taken in addition to, like, the electronics. And, you know, they can replace guitars. I mean, it's a shame. It's a pain in the ass. But, hey. Thrift there, you know, there's pawn stores all over town with lots of guitars. So, yeah, that was a huge bummer. They're still kind of recovering from that. So we're having a little benefit fundraiser for them on Friday.
Lots of good bands.
A lot of good bands. Actors Killed Lincoln's on the lineup. Spike and Jackson will probably themselves playing a little early.
El Acapella.
Yeah. There's, I forget everybody who's on it. It's I think I'm the MC.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Somebody needs to give me a list of who's playing. but no, it's gonna be a big fiasco. It's gonna be a great time. Show about 8 o'clock. It'll be early, and you can get drunk before the band start playing.
We know we have a problem, sir.
Maybe
remember the other one.
That's
right
a
now.
Good maybe.
Sorry, everybody.
so please come out for that. And then Saturday. Wait a minute. I think I have my ticket
Saturday,
on me. Even
Saturday.
No, I put it somewhere safe in my house. That was smart of me.
Ticket for what, Rory?
Jenkins CD release. Not quite as long as it took Chinese Democracy to get here, but just about, I believe a year and a half, 18 months in production, the album Jenkins by Big Remote.
No, it was a year in production, and then they spent 2 years waiting to release it. So.
Well, they tweaked all of the little...
We finished tweaking, and then they still didn't do anything with it. I don't even remember if it sounds good or not.
Well, yeah, they had, well, they had somebody else master it, and then they decided they liked your master better, and da-da-da-da-da. There was all sorts of crazy stuff.
That happens.
Where's his show at?
Reno Artworks, right?
Okay, wrong.
Dickerson?
I needed to find my ticket to have that information.
Oh,
so yes, Reno Artworks. You know, you are right. You
for
are
a
correct.
Change, I know what's going on.
Yeah, Reno Artworks out on Dickerson, 1995.
And then that same night at Strega, Actors Killed Lincoln are also having their CD release party.
Oh,
which I also recorded.
Nice.
And so I'm going to be...
And I'll also just say, and then Pinky Polansky and Reno, We Have a Problem, are playing a show at Zephyr with the
Did you say Zephyr?
Jub Jubs, damn it.
Okay, now we all have to drink every time Rory mistakes the Zephyr for Jub Jubs.
Yeah, that's another good rule to the
Happens at least once a show. They're having a show at Jub Jubs called Fuck Your Show. So I like the fact that they're having a show on the night of two CD release parties called Fuck Your Show. So a lot of great stuff on Saturday night. I'm sure there's other stuff going on Friday night, but you should all be supporting Spike and Jackson and Erica. Because, Erica's a big part of the Reno scene. She was a manager over at West 2nd Street for 20 years or something.
They do the karaoke, yeah.
Recently stopped working there. It's a bit of a loss on their part, I say.
Yeah, absolutely.
But they could definitely use the community's support here and a little bit of help. So
this is a kick-ass weekend. What do you think Jen thinks about it?
Jen?
Seriously, I think you just made my nipples hard.
Nice. She's always like
Do we have
that.
Any good – that's the only great reaction.
Oh, also, me and Maya have
– Oh, yeah, wait.
We have the closing of our art show at Foxy Olive on Friday. So you could go
That's
hit
right.
that, go look at some cool art, and then go to one of the other fun
hey,
events
Jess
on Friday. Blaise. Spike and Eric.
Does Jess Blaze support that?
Oh, Jess, are you going to be going?
God, you're
Abso-fucking-lutely.
All right, cool.
You need to put all the ones we call for on the same board.
Yeah, they're
on the same page.
It all gets moved around.
I called Penny, and she was really excited.
She said it's a shame.
She's that excited.
Ain't that a shame.
And another show that's going to be happening, I don't know if it's Friday or Saturday, Hellbound Glory will be performing with Shooter Jennings.
Right, right. Mm.
At Chapel, right.
Chapel, yeah.
That'll be a good show, too.
That is just so kick-ass.
This is a killer weekend as far as live music in Reno. So please do it. Last weekend was DJs. This weekend it's live music. Do yourself a favor and get out.
Yeah, human
power. Out of the house.
Absolutely.
All right, so let's get on with the Tom Gordon show.
Yeah, hi, everybody.
Is Tom the only one here?
No. Dr. Davis, Alan, hi, welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Welcome, fellas. Thanks for being on.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
And Dr. Davis, I want to say a fine congratulations, because Saturday is 30 years for you.
Yes, it's 30 years of this studio.
Longest running commercial studio in Reno.
Congrats.
That is so awesome.
That gets a...
Woo!
Ow! Not the laugh. Damn it.
Golf clap.
Oh, you're bitching at me for not having chest ready. Meanwhile, you're claps.
There's the golf clap. Nice.
I can't find my clap.
Maybe I gave it to someone. The gift that keeps on giving.
That's right. So, Tom, how are you? It's been a year.
Yes, it's been an eventful year. Trying to make it work. A lot of changes and a lot of upward motion. A lot of great music coming out of our town, as always. And just keeping the curve. And congratulations on another year of the show here.
Thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, no, we're as surprised as anyone.
That's our golf clap for you. That was awesome.
That's a real clap.
You got to pull that out so we can listen to it again. Right?
Sexually.
The applause that they gave us. No.
Oh, yeah, their applause.
Pull that out for you. Sexually.
Gotcha.
Their clap. Right. I'll get that.
Right.
It was a...
We've never gotten claps for us before.
Sure. Oh, really? Why not? You guys put a lot of effort into this show. This has been an ongoing effort.
I've been told that I am the person people would ruin a relationship to be with and the person in history that they'd want to start a fist fight with. So
we'll be finding out if any of you agree later.
in this room.
Usually we do all the golf clapping.
Right.
Oh, okay. Yes, this is fascinating. Thanks for coming.
How about that? Isn't that something? what do we got lined up tonight?
Well,
tell us a little bit about what's happening first.
So since we're coming up on the big 30 for Emirage / the former name Axtrax, we've put together a collection of songs from the annals of history. Annals. Sorry, I always get that wrong.
The deep black hole of history. Yeah, I disagree, Tom. I think you were right the first time.
Good looking out. Oh, so the...
The password is...
Good. That's excellent. So Dr. Davis and I went through the vaults trying to find stuff from just little pieces of history that started... from the studio downtown to where it is now, and brought way too many songs to choose from for the playing. So like we did last time, we have some stories that are kind of fun regarding the songs that we've picked, and just kind of a little insight on the another chapter of the music history of this town that a lot of people don't know about.
Yeah, it's kind of like a secret.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to kind of start with the only... Academy Award nominated song recorded in Reno.
Hey.
Ever. It's the only one that's been nominated, and it's Endless Love by Lionel Richie and Diana Ross. And I'm going to pass it to Dr. Davis on that because I was not involved on this. A little more of my time. But
a little before you.
This is kind of the beginning of the reign of terror of Dr. Davis and his studios here in town.
It all started in 1964 with a Iowa tape recorder.
Yeah.
Nice.
Acquired from Radio Shack.
Nice.
It was, 1864.
It was probably about $8.99. And I became fascinated with recording.
Sure.
And that was right after the Beatles came out. So I had to have my guitar. And I started trying to record guitar on this little tape recorder and playing it back. And that was just too magical. And I just really got a love for recording. So fast forward that I got a little better on the guitar and started to be in bands, and I wrote some songs. And when I moved out to Reno in 1977, I had my proverbial suitcase of songs I had written starting at age 12. And after starting my chiropractic practice and acquiring some funding for the first time in my life,
through the legit job.
Yeah. The day job, yeah.
The band did not pay that well. Yeah, the day job. I decided I wanted to make some demos. I get out the Yellow Pages, and there are no recording studios in Reno, Nevada. I'm like, how is that possible? I mean, this is like a showbiz kind of town, et cetera.
Right.
There is not a recording studio in this town. And I didn't know what I was going to do. I was really wanting to record. And I had actually met somebody that I wanted to sing my songs. We can talk about that later, yeah. But because that person ended up being famous. But at the time I met him, he was a great singer, but he was not known. And he was willing to sing my songs. And although I can sing, but not like this guy. And I thought, even though my songs were probably not fantastic, when he sang them, they were going to be great.
Yeah. Right.
So anyway, I ran into a fellow in town. I don't know if he still lives here. His name is Ron Butler. And Ron used to play at a place called, it was then called the Del Mar Station. And now it became Del Mar.
Then it was just Del Mar for a while.
It was the Del Mar Station. History will prove me right on that. And he also played at Trader Dick's at the Nugget. So he and I were talking, and he was going to make a record. And I said, where are you going to make this record? And he had to go to California to make this record.
Wow.
There was a little 8-track studio in Costa Mesa. And so he came back with his record, and he and I were talking, and he said, you know, that's crazy that we don't have a recording studio in Reno, Nevada. And he had talked to people who had the 8-track studio to move it up to Reno, and he had talked to him upgrading to a 16-track studio.
Dun, dun, dun.
And he wanted to know if I would invest in it. And I thought, you know, that sounds like kind of a good thing. My first question is, would I ever be able to use it? And he's like, sure.
Hey, shameless self-promotion.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm going to Costa Mesa. Now they don't even have the 8-track. So we started getting this put together and got some other partners, and to make an incredibly long story, a filibuster. No, to make a long story short. We ended up building a 24-track studio. And the first original location was what is now a famous location in Reno, 148 West Street.
The West Street Market.
Yeah, the market there.
And that was the original location of the studio.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
And we had put that
– about when was that you opened the doors on that?
That was 1980.
Okay.
Wow.
And so we put it together there. We got a MM1100. Tom will know what that is.
Ampex 24-track.
Actually originally belonged to the Beach Boys. It was their machine.
My understanding, there was actually sand in the bottom of it. Mel told me that once.
Really?
Yeah.
That's not a joke.
Talk to Mel.
The white sands. Never mind. So.
You know, Mommy always tells me not to play with the sand that she puts in the baggie.
Are you eating powdered donuts? Don't dip that in the coffee. So we got the studio together, and it was in downtown Reno. It was right around from Harris. Mm-hmm. And we got a call one day that Diana Ross was playing in town, and they needed to cut a track called Endless Love.
Wow.
And they needed it now. And so they rented out our studio, flew Lionel Richie in, and they had come in with the music tracks. So we put that up, and then Lionel Richie and Diana worked all night. They,
wow.
It was started late at night, ended early in the morning to get the vocals. And so the vocals on that were recorded in my studio originally in Reno called Sunwood Productions.
So who was the engineer on the session?
They brought in their own engineer.
Okay.
I just read that last night.
Tom was only 7.
Yeah.
I actually read that last night. I meant to bring it. I forgot. Sorry, man.
Do you remember what mics they were?
Oh, God.
It was our Neumann U87.
Of course. You know. Just a $3,000 thing you throw around.
So, which is now residing in Tanglewood Studios. We'll give them a plug.
Yeah, absolutely.
Lee's a great guy.
And we're all supporting the cause here.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Well, I want to say that's a great example about something I always say about Reno. I've always found it to be the kind of place, if you see a need, if you see a hole, it's the kind of place where you can go and fill it.
Sexually.
And then,
are we talking about the Mustang Ranch? Or the
sexually.
Right. But, you know, there were no studios. You got together with some people. Mm-hmm. You got a barn and you put on a show.
That's right.
And, you know, and here it is, you know, 30 years later. Yeah. And you can still do that kind of thing here in Reno. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of other cities you don't – I don't know. I've found that I didn't have that freedom to just fill the niche to you know, blow something up because
it's already dog out there. Yeah.
So you know, it's nice to know that it's always been that kind of place.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that the tracking room is where the foyer is, where the Greek place and where Reno Envy was.
Right. Okay.
That was the tracking room. So that's the room that Lionel Richie and Dinah Ross cut the vocals. Oh, wow.
So next time you're there, just stop and think.
Well, did anybody know what it – because that song was this fantastic hit that everybody heard everywhere, and I had no idea it was recorded in my own town.
Yeah, that's new on us.
That's so awesome.
Well, it was the number one song of that year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
After they recorded it.
Thank you, Alan.
After they recorded at your studio and it became a number one, does that mean more ducats for you or more prestige? Well, definitely more prestige, right?
I got a platinum record.
Right. So nice. Now they want to work in your studio, huh? Yeah. People are banging on the door to work at Sunwood, right?
I can't really say that happened.
It would make for a nice story.
Yeah, it's the producer who makes the more ducats on the back end, not necessarily the engineers. So... the producer was someone who had come with it and went back. So
I see.
Work for hire, damn it.
Right.
No, just before we play it, I did a comparison. I went and bought the soundtrack on vinyl at Recycled, support Recycled Records.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I also, we couldn't find the CD, so I downloaded it from iTunes, and I picked the better sounding of the two.
And I'm going to guess it was the analog.
And it's not because it was analog. It's because this whole new trend of mastering everything so loud for digital releases, the analog, there isn't a warrior out there to make the loudest record out there is for the loudest CD. So the original master on that vinyl is the way the mix should sound like. So that's why we end up with the vinyl.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So fire when ready, monsieur.
Yeah, and here we are with Endless Love.
On vinyl.
My there's only you in my life, the only thing that's right.
My first love, you're every breath that I take, you're every step I make.
And I want to share all my love with you. No one else will do.
And your eyes, they tell me how much you care. Oh, yes, you will.
Hearts that beat as one, our lives have just begun.
Forever,
I'll hold you close in my arms. I can't resist your charm.
Oh,
I love the scratchy pops
Ladies
and stuff.
Ladies and gentlemen, the soft, soulful hits of the early 1980s.
And actually, thus began a little genre of duets.
Yeah.
That's true. That, that was kind of the first one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sometimes, I mean, Les Paul and Mary Ford. But
right, yeah. But.
You mean like Kris Kristofferson and Barbara Streisand, right?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
the big famous late 70s, early 80s.
Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton.
Right. One. Yeah. Barry Gibb and Streisand and what was the other? Yeah, I was thinking you beat me to
Mama Cass and a ham sandwich.
Oh, God.
Too soon? Oh, sorry. Too soon.
You couldn't pull those two apart if you tried.
It was destined.
Ouch. Well, folks, I know it's been really short, but I do have to get out of here. So I'm gonna hand the keys off to Nikki here.
Dun, dun, dun.
And he's gonna drive. Yeah, keep it all in one piece, son.
Thanks, bud.
Don't stay out till midnight.
Can I order a pizza?
All right. Just don't eat it in the car.
Make Spencer go get it.
So I'm going to go to the open mic. Hopefully I'll see you there, or I'll see you next week there. And Nick will be there next week. Hopefully he won't be too tired.
Absolutely. Unless they get another job. Hey. Cross your fingers for that.
Let's hope Nick isn't there because he's got another job.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
Please, I can use
that. But you guys, thank you for coming in. Sorry I can't
stay
to talk longer.
Thanks for having us, man.
We'll see you around town sometime.
Okay. Yep.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye, Rory. Good night, lady.
There go the sound effects. Did you tell him you're unplugging?
Yeah, he can fix it.
He doesn't care.
The remainder of the show will be without dings.
And now that we've commented on it, I have to leave the click in.
Oh, well. That's
asshole.
So, what's next on the docket for this part?
So, we kind of did it in two halves. We have the Axe Trax era, somewhat Axe Trax era, and then the Imaraj era. So, and there aren't a lot of source recordings available from the old Axe Trax era. A lot of that stuff, you know, was released on vinyl and just didn't have wide distribution, and the vaulting and the cataloging just wasn't there back then. So a lot of the tracks that we have are stuff that Dr. Davis was directly involved in, because he still had masters to it and stuff from his records. So you guys, I don't know if you remember, were you here in the MGM days, Nick, when MGM was the MGM?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I was.
Okay, me too.
So down in the basement, there was that photographer, Karen.
Yeah.
She one of the proud displays on the side of her shop was the album cover of Dr. Davis's first album, Davis. Oh, which I have in the car. I brought a copy for you guys to see.
Love to see that.
Yeah. And that is a kind of a time capsule of the kind of material that was recorded at Axe Trax and Sunwood in those transitional years. So we're kind of moving up on the stuff off the first Davis album. And Dr. Davis, you can set us up on that one, on the first track.
So an epilogue on the Endless Love.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Can I cut you off?
Not a problem. So I decided... I took a little trip to England,
and one
of my friends said, if you're going to England, I need to give you the address of Air Studios, and that's run by George Martin, who is the Beatles producer.
Right.
My friend said, nobody would ever find this if they didn't know it was there. It's very nondescript, although it's on Oxford Street. It's no longer there because he since has moved it. So I went to Oxford Street, and sure enough, there was the address, and I was able to get up to Air Studios. They have security there, but I brought a card of, you know, my studio card, and showed it to the security guards, and told them I'm from America, and I've come a long way, and I want to see the studio, and they took pity on me, and they let me go up. And I, at that time, the what they call the T-boy, we call him the gopher.
Uh-huh. Spencer.
The Spencer.
That's what they call him.
I would love some tea,
Spencer. He's probably a big producer now. and so he showed me around, and he was great. They had a great SSL board for those audio engineers out there. And he said, sit in this chair. And I sat right there, and he goes, how's that feel? And I was like, that feels fantastic. He goes, that's where Paul McCartney sits.
Wow.
Like, I'm never getting off this chair. I've never washed my butt. And then, and he said, over there is where they recorded McCartney's movie Give My Regards to Broad Street. This is where Ringo was and where his he knocked over the cymbal and whatever. Subsequently, I actually made another trip back to England 6 months later, and I was getting on the elevator. George Martin was right there getting on the elevator with me. Wow. And I didn't really want to say anything about the Beatles. He might have had a lot of people in his career talk about that. But I just
– I doubt it.
You think?
It's,
like,
it's probably never come up.
You know, and I wouldn't have a question about the Beatles anyway to ask. So but we were going up the elevator and, you know, there's, you know, Mrs. Davis and myself and George Martin. So I just said, you know, I really admire your work. Your work is just great. And he actually seemed to really appreciate that, and he asked me where I was going. I said, actually, I'm going up to your studio, and I have a studio in America. And he goes, oh, really? Who have you worked with? Thank God. Diana Ross and Lionel Richie. We recorded Endless Love in my studio. And he was like, oh, that's a great track. He goes, oh, I love working with Diana. She's great. And he wanted to know if I'd be working in his studio. And I said I was actually there to take the T-boy to lunch. So I promised him if I ever came back, I would take him to lunch. And he really wanted to go to Pizza Hut.
In England.
In England.
Yeah. Cool.
Could have gone anywhere. And so, but it was great that to meet George. And he was wonderful, posed for pictures. And I actually mailed him a copy of the picture he and I took together. Not that he needed that for posterity, but I asked him if he would autograph it, which he didn't. He mailed it back to me.
Oh,
that's awesome. Like,
cool guy,
and
man.
So he is a fantastic gentleman.
I got to interrupt for 1 second. For those of you who have ever seen the movie Phantasm,
yeah,
the tall man in Phantasm looks suspiciously like George Martin.
Oh, yeah.
You'll never see George
side now.
You never see George Martin and the tall man in the same room. Coincidence? I think not. That's my horror side there. Sorry, carry on.
You've never seen him and Yoko Ono in the same room.
Thank
either.
God.
So, segueing on to a little later, the singer that I was alluding to that was going to sing my demos for me was Lee Greenwood. And Lee is now known for his song Every 4th of July, God Bless the USA.
I'm proud to be an American.
Yeah.
That's
the one. I know that song.
It's a nice twang, Tom.
And so Lee and I worked together over a course of a year with him learning my music. And then he basically got famous and went off to Nashville before he could ever sing a note of it.
Damn it.
So we could say Lee Greenwood got good practicing your stuff.
Yeah.
Well, interestingly, he wasn't particularly a songwriter at the time I met him. He was a singer. And we were working on my material, and I went over to his house. He lived on Zolezzi Lane.
Oh, wow.
And in the apartments there.
Wow.
And I'd go over there every Wednesday at 2 o'clock, and we'd meet for 3 hours. And I went over one afternoon. He goes, hey, I wrote a song. I said, wow, let's hear it. And it was like the most tremendous piece of music I'd ever heard in 5 years. It was sort of a Billy Joel, Buzz Skaggs kind of – because Lee actually was a rhythm and blues and rock and roll singer. He wasn't particularly country at all. And I said, that is a fantastic song. And then it started to become – I'd go over there on Wednesdays and we would be working on his music. Uh-huh. And I tried to get him discovered. There was a band that will come up a little later in our discussion, Danny Davis and the Nashville Brass. And there was a bass player in that band who had some songwriting credits. And I told him, I said, you need to hear Lee Greenwood, because Lee was playing – they don't have it now, but over at GSR when it was MGM, it was called the Lion's Den. And Lee would be there 8 hours a night just plunking on the piano. He's actually a genius musician. He would not disagree. Just ask him. He could play three saxophones at a time. Lee.
I don't want to know how that happens.
Lee, Lee, break down. Hire two more guys. And he has perfect musical pitch. He knew well over 1,000 songs by heart. people could just he knew every song. He was really that amazing, and he sang great. And I actually used to bring my tape recorder down there, and I do have miles of tape from a little recorder, harkening back to 1964, yeah, of Lee doing his
cabaret
act. Yeah. And so Lee, you know, my buddy from the Nashville Brass went over there and said, "Hey, he's a good singer. I just don't know. I mean, we're country." And he ended up getting discovered by the bass player from Mel Tillis's band,
okay,
who on his own happened down there and saw him and goes, "Dude, you're going to Nashville," and took him down on a songwriting contract. Lee came over to my house and he said, "Hey, Mel Tillis is going to listen to one of these songs we've been working on." And he was like, "But he goes, the one I want to play him, it's not done yet. I need a 3-syllable word for this part right here." Mm-hmm. So I looked at it and I came up with the word, and the word was agony. And he says, "Come with me." And we went backstage at the Nugget, and Mel had this old piano. If anyone's ever been backstage at the Nugget in the Celebrity Room, there's this old piano there, and Lee got on there and played that song. And Mel Tillis said, "I would record that. That is a great song." He said, "I'm going to have to make it a little happier. It's too sad." Mm. Probably get rid of the word agony and be fine. now recollecting. And that was the beginning of Lee's songwriting career. And Lee and I did record together at my house in a room not unlike this, except there's more Beatle posters. And so interestingly, after Lee became famous, and this would be about 5 years later, I'd say about 1985, he had already had many big hits. "Time on My Hands," "Ring on Her Finger" was one of them. He called over to the studio, and he was doing a Coors commercial, and he booked the studio. And it was very surrealistic because I was engineering down then. And so there was Lee out there, all famous, with his, he had bling, and it was amazing. Came in a limousine and had his tracksuit on, you know. And,
wow.
And had his own headphones that he brought in with his own gear. It's very cool. And so there it was. I was recording Lee Greenwood in my recording studio, and it was kind of surrealistic because, you know, 5 years before that, I was recording Lee in a bedroom with one microphone, and now here it was. I was in a 24-track studio, and Lee was a big star, and so that was kind of interesting, and I do not have a copy of that radio commercial for us to play.
Are you guys still friends?
You know, I do see him from time to time. When he's come to town here, I've snuck backstage and hang out with him a little bit, and he's always very pleasant.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Is he really proud to be an American?
Yes, he is. and because one of his great friends is General Norman Schwarzkopf.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
Man.
Were they meet at an Amway meeting?
He's proud to be a Republican, too.
Right. Just like Rick.
Yeah. Sorry.
No problems. Cool. That's...
This awkward silence brought to you by Pinky Polansky. Rick, you want to run our tattoo commercial so we can get that out of the way, too?
Oh, you mean the Stingray?
Reset? Yeah.
Stingray tattoo.
I love Stingray tattoo.
Gift certificates available for 18th birthdays, divorce finalizations, or prison release.
Private appointments available for private tattoos.
Tattoos hurt if you're a pussy.
Check out stingraytattoo.net.
Did Mr. Greenwood have any tattoos?
No, he did not.
Just wondering.
Well, not that could be seen.
Right, right.
I won't interrogate.
I could see Alan has a couple sleeves of tattoos.
Getting there.
How about you, Tom? No tattoos?
Never found an image I'm that in love with.
Dr. D, no? Yeah.
No.
I think my mom would disown me.
Well, you don't tell your mom about your hidden tattoos. See? You just put them up here.
Oh, you clever.
Yeah.
Clever boy.
They hide them under the T-shirt. Yeah. Actually, my mom knows. Your mom has a hot tub and is like, "Go ahead, honey, use a hot tub." She's like, "Oh, you got tattoos, huh?" Yeah.
That's one way to drop the bomb.
Yeah.
Well, maybe if your tattoo says mom.
Yeah. There you go. She's really happy.
It really says wow.
I just need to invert my arms all the time.
I understand Alan's mom hates him.
She is upset.
Really?
I don't understand all the skulls and stuff, you know? I get it. I get it.
Mom, I'll look like a queen if I get flowers.
I have flowers.
Oh, good.
They're just not colored in yet.
Yeah. It's true. I forgot about that.
Yeah, look, I got some
ladies'
roses.
Faces.
Yeah.
Zombie chicks.
Zombie chicks and a Shure 55 microphone.
Yeah.
Oh, badass.
And a tube.
A X606, I think.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
That's cool.
Tom was actually, he was going to get a tattoo of my face on his ass, on his ass.
Tattooed his own ass with your face on that tattooed ass?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then I got confused and chickened out.
Yeah. Good call. So where are we in this on this journey?
Yeah. Well, Tom and I had to meet.
Yes, we did. We had so much to go through. Actually, maybe we should do Live a Little, since you brought up the brass.
All right. Yes.
So that'll be three, sir.
Sit outside my window, humming this tune. If you don't live a little, then you gotta live a lot. Lazy Sunday, just a rest in my head. Big decision, should I get out of bed? If you don't live a little, then you gotta live a lot. Monday morning, hear the working bell ring.
Back when you use real horns.
Those were horns, and those were the Nashville Brass.
Yes.
I was going to say, that's a great horn sample. which sound library is that?
It'd be the Nashville Brass. And so it was interesting that you know, I made friends with the Nashville Brass. Danny Davis at the time actually was a patient of mine when he came to town. And then I got to know the rest of the band. And I was recording this album, and they were very interested that a chiropractor owns a recording studio, and could they come see the studio? And I said, I could do better than that. You can record in the studio. I have this nifty little song called Live a Little, and I'm really thinking – I had really kind of in my head at least heard the – as you heard on that track, the wah-wah-wah type of horn sound.
With the muting
thing. Yeah. And so I let them hear a demo of the song, and they put together kind of a score of for it. And we got to the studio, and they played it, and it was not at all what I had envisioned. And here is the Nashville Brass playing really for free because we were friends. And so I said, that's not really what I'm hearing. And they're like, but they're gentlemen, these Nashville cats.
Professional.
Were,
yeah.
They were. They said, what do you hear? So I hummed the parts, and they went, that's good. They said, hold on. They got their little racers out, and they got their pencils out, and then they put together what you just heard, the horn section, which is wow. How I had envisioned it. And it was interesting. Back then I had a 1977 Firebird, which I was very proud of. And it was red, so I acquired a certain number of speeding tickets, and I swear I was not speeding. I really wasn't. Why speed in Reno? You're there in 5 minutes. And so we had four Nashville Brass players and their horns and me all inside my Firebird. And to this day, I don't know how we did that. You know, got to the studio and did the track and came back and you know, and as you heard on that, I mean, really, it was a tremendous sound they put together, and these guys have been playing together for years. So that was a little claim to fame for that record to have a notable RCA recording group of RCA recording artists on there.
Yeah.
Now, during all this cool stuff, man, were you ever engineering it, or were you just involved? Like, I mean, who was engineering the stuff?
I did some of the engineering. I did not originally know how to engineer when I acquired the studio.
No one does.
Yeah, that is so true. That's scary. And that, and when I met Tom, I was like, you went to college and learned how to do this? Oh, my God.
You planned ahead?
You know, it was the first time I genuflect. So
gross.
Yeah, really.
Was that gross? I'm not sure what that means.
Gross.
Okay, Google it. I did some engineering, and then we did have an engineer down there. We had two engineers down there, most notably Mark Ishikawa, who is still in this town, and he's done a lot of great music and is to this day a friend of mine.
And the first person who ever recorded me play drums.
Was Mark Ishikawa?
Yep.
I did not know this.
Yeah,
that's right.
So that makes me the second?
Yeah. Oh. Star Sound. We were at Star Sound the year before.
Tom's a badass drummer player.
Thank you kindly.
Player. Drummer, percussionist. Yes.
Donkey jaw player.
Yeah. That's the brand. The brand of drums you play is badass.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll brand it. Thanks.
All right.
So the another Pinky Pulaski nod right there.
Sure. Check the Pinky link. Let's continue.
Let's give a little Riku.
Felix likes to drink.
Okay.
That's awesome. So I'm thinking, getting to know. A studio is a slow process. You know, you got to learn the acoustics of the room, and you got to, just get a lot of experience in there, hearing what the room sounds like. And we've learned in both revs of, I've learned it at Granny's and I learned it at Mirage, but I'm sure he was discovering it. The best way to do it is work on some stuff of your own.
Yeah,
and you just do in-house projects. And his second album, Davis 2. Is actually, I think, maybe a record holder for the longest production, 30 years almost. We finally finished it, or we're in the middle of a final, maybe or end of a remix of one song. But you started in what year?
82.
So 30 years. For an album.
I thought Jenkins took forever.
Yeah,
no kidding.
Jenkins don't have anything on Davis 2. So. We remixed the whole record You mix it at Axtrax first.
Yes.
Then it got kind of shelved for a while. We came together on Emirage, and the way he wanted to learn the new gear was to remix that album. And the first song that we did 12 years ago, we decided, now that we've gotten better and know the room, we have new gear, we need to do the first one again to match the rest of the record the way it came out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, just insane.
Redo.
Just so you know, it took me 6 months to decide, oh, all right, I will remix it.
He has a hard time committing. Yes, it's true. So the next track, I think, will be, where did I, five.
Ladies in their Mercedes.
So this is the third remix over 30 years of Dr. Davis's first track off the upcoming album, Davis 2, Ladies in Mercedes.
Kind of like, kind of Alice Cooper-y, I think.
Oh, wow. I never even considered that. You're absolutely right. No wonder I wanted to push the guitars up. That is, you're, wow.
Yeah, kind of has a tone.
Yeah, it yeah. really does. Now,
I liked it. That was cool.
Yeah, it's a, there were Simmons electric drums in the two previous versions that Dr. Davis was kind enough to acquiesce to let me mute in the last version.
I didn't know that. Are they muted?
I think they are. I don't remember hearing the pew, 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 pew.
Oh, yeah. That was big in the
80s. We can recall this mix.
We can recall. That might add another year to the production, however.
For the young kids out there, there was a time in the 80s when we thought drum rooms would be a thing of the past. Turns out drums are actually cool.
They are.
Yep.
Yeah, those drum machines. They have a place, but real drums are cool.
Right.
They're very cool. So any thoughts on that tune, Dr. D?
I should give credit to the lead guitar player on that. And yes. He was an engineer at the studio at the time also. We'll call him Rockin' Tom Evans. I haven't heard from Tom in a while. But he was just such a major player. And he had that great sound. And we were recording. He said, you know what? I think I can do the lead on this. I'm like, go for it. And so I guess I get recording engineering credits on the leads.
Right.
Because somebody had to sit behind the board and push a button. But he did a tremendous job on that. And I haven't seen Tom for years. But if he is around, Tom, thank you so much.
Is he any relation to Don Evans, who was the head engineer at Granny's House?
No.
No.
Just a queen.
What are the odds?
Or Linda Evans, who was in Dynasty somewhere.
Yeah. Are you ready?
Or Robert Evans.
Oh, yeah.
Or Dale Evans.
Oh, wow.
So I'm going to jump back to Linda Evans. Are you ready for this, everyone?
Yes. The Linda Evans story?
I'm related to Linda Evans.
Oh.
I've always wondered that about you.
We were all going to ask you, man. It's the elephant. It was the elephant in the room.
Yeah. We're like ninth cousins. It's like super distant related. But the problem is that means I'm also related to Yanni.
Oh, wow.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I know, right? Thank
Come
you.
Come on.
Have you met either one of these celebrities?
Neither. I've met Yanni's drummer and bass player at Black Potato.
Well, that's
Did
close.
You tell them?
I did. I did. They're like, really? Are you sure?
Because I'm going to tell Yanni.
I'm going to tell Yanni on you. I like the way that flows off my tongue. Yeah.
I'm going to tell Yanni.
Yanni on you.
Enya. What?
No, I'm not related to Enya.
Okay,
too bad.
No ornicle flow here.
So back in the early days of Axe Trax.
Yeah. Oh. Tidy segue.
Back in the earlier days, the radio stations, especially KCBN and KOZZ, had...
KCBN. Mm-hmm. Wow. That goes way... Okay.
It does go way back.
I remember that.
Yes. And they had contests where they would put out their album, put out a KOZZ album. And
the KCBN, homegrown?
The homegrown.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I remember that. Yeah.
And that was... Time so great for Axe Trax because we were so busy that summer with people coming in, record. They really wanted their tracks recorded well, and they wanted to get on that record. That was a big kudo back in that time to do that, and that gave me a lot of experience getting to know the room and getting to know how Axe Trax sounded because I was basically the engineer there at the time, and. I thought, you know what, I'm going to put one of my songs on there too because one of the great things is they would play your song on the radio. So every night they took some of the entries and they would play your song on the radio. You didn't have to win. Nice. You just had to enter. I said, I'm doing that. So I put on a song called You Know How to Love Me.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was the first and only time – in my life, I really ever heard one of my songs on the radio. So that was a big moment for me. And I think we brought that track
with
us.
We do. Sorry, we went out of a little order, I guess.
That would be number two.
Number two. Sorry about that.
So let's check that out.
You sit beside me when I'm feeling low. You know how to love me. You're there inside me like a song I know. You know how to love me. You look into my soul and draw the pain away. Smile because you know I know. You know how to love me. You know how to love me. You know. You know how to love me. time I saw your smile, you know how I love you. And though at first you were shy for a while, you know how to love me. You look into my soul and draw the pain away. Smile because you know I know. You know how to love me. You know how.
Fade out, yeah.
Yeah.
Dr. Davis has a pet name for that, the PF.
The perfect fade.
Yes, exactly. I learned
that. Love the perfect fade.
I get yelled at for that all the time from the bands. I'll finish everything and they'll go, could you have it fade out a little faster?
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, you want it smooth and beautiful and not jarring? And I'm really, that was lovely.
Yeah, that's one neat trick I picked up from Dr. D working with him for the last 12 years is there is an art to fade. It isn't just a linear thing. You're supposed to start kind of slow and then speed up in the middle and then kind of linger at the end. And he has the right touch for that.
Awesome.
There's a feel.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Dr. D, how big is your catalog? How many songs do you have you written?
I've written between 300 and 400 songs.
Wow.
But as far as my recorded catalog, we're under 30. under 40 because we have the other.
Oh, that's true.
The other project that's
coming up.
Well, maybe under 50 because there's a few other. Yeah,
I think I'd be safe to call you one of the most prolific songwriters in Reno.
At least in the room.
Definitely the most prolific in probably the Sparks area.
You know how many bands Nick is in?
And Nick, just so you know, Nick is one of the finest song craftsman in this town has been ever since I've worked
with him.
Thanks,
man.
I just love the way he hears melody and choice of lyrics is just great.
I've got like 10% of what you got.
But it's quality work.
Yeah. Thank you,
quality,
Tom.
Quality
Thank you.
Versus quantity. So
aww.
No offense to your quantity, Dr. D.
You haven't heard
that really.
Yeah, that did kind of sound like a slam.
Damn.
Jeez.
No offense taken.
Okay, thank you. So we had a mutual friend that was another a great artist that really not a lot of people in this town knew about, and he was a Reno shining star that got extinguished way too early.
Oh, no.
A guy named Tommy Dean
Pearsall.
And I worked with him at Granny's house doing a couple demos, and then once I started working with Dr. Davis, I discovered he had a long history with Tommy as well.
Mm-hmm. Tommy had come into the studio to cut some demos, and his voice was incredible, as you'll hear in a minute. And I talked to him about management because I also at that time was doing artist management. And he signed management with me, and we were getting ready to put together some projects together. He happened to stop into the studio while I was recording a song called Crazy Thing. And it had a kind of a country feel to it. And for me, this was a magical song because this was that one song that I literally wrote in 5 minutes. I just sat down with my guitar. I had like one line in my head. And in fact, it came from a patient. This doesn't sound great, but the patient had come in and they were telling me they heard in a place that they had never heard before. And I thought, oh, hold on. Let me get my Post-it note out. Heard where I never heard before. I said, okay.
So –
And I thought, that is a great line. And I just had that line. And one day I just, you know, the muse hit and I just picked up my guitar and I wrote this song. And as you'll hear the song, I virtually, with just one minor change, it came out like this. The melody came out. The words came out. It was like, I've never had a song that was I ever wrote before like that. Usually it's crafted and you have many lines and it just like came out. So – you know, some people talk about they don't know where this comes from. And
the muse.
Yeah. I've felt that before. My best songs are the 5 minute songs, the ones you write so fast. Yeah. Those ones are the ones people start singing back to me, man. The other ones that I worked on for a long time hardly ever get requested or, you know, they get forgotten.
That's telling. Yeah. Absolutely.
So Tommy had stopped in, and it was just one of those, again, a magical moment. And he was like dropping something off at the studio. And I said, hey, Tommy, come in and listen to this song for a minute. So he listened to it, and I had the words written out. And he goes, that's a nice song. I said, hey, why don't you go out there for a minute, and why don't you just cut a vocal? Let me hear what it sounds like with a country voice. So he listened to the song one more time. And looked at the words and says, okay. He says, I think I have it. And he went out there and he cut it. And what you're going to hear is that take. After he was done, he goes, well, let me try it a few more times. I said, you are done.
Wow.
that is you're not going to do it better than that. That's the definitive take on that. And we always wanted to do something with him and that song. You know, he had an unfortunate series of life events and he eventually passed away and we never got to finish his management or getting him where I think he rightfully belongs. So anyway, we brought this track because after when I was remixing my album over the last 10 years, Tommy's vocal track was still on there. And after we remixed it, we did a special mix, you know, if Tommy were still alive kind of tribute because Tom and I love this guy's voice.
Yeah, it's
so
amazing.
We'll go ahead and play that.
In the morning, I called your name aloud. Why should I do such a crazy thing? I've never been a lover, but I fell in love with you. Why should I do such a crazy thing? There's been hard whiskey and harder women, and my gambling's kept me poor. But you hurt me where I never hurt before. I should be playing, but all I do is sleep. Why should I do such a crazy thing? never been a dreamer, but I dreamt you loved me too. Why should I do such a crazy thing? There's been hard whiskey, harder women, and my gambling's kept me poor. But you hurt me where I never hurt before. Never been a lover, but I fell in love with you. I've never been a dreamer, but I dreamt you loved me too. Why should I do such a crazy thing?
You know, I know I'm in love because every silly love song I hear makes me think of that freak Dave. So is it okay that is that okay with you?
Let's be okay.
Tell
him no.
Don't think gay stuff to my song.
That's great.
I think Tommy would be okay with that.
Yes,
Okay.
I think Tommy would be honored, actually.
He was. Awesome. Yeah. And he was a tremendous guy, you know, and, you know, you can hear it in his voice.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, he just, you know, the whole thing about that song was just so magical. Writing in 5 minutes, Tommy coming in and putting that vocal on it. I mean, that really would never have happened. It was just, we were working on it and he just came in at random, so. It's a great track.
And you just don't see one take, vocal takes like that. That's pretty darn rare. I hear that the only time I saw that was with Boyz II Men. Sean Stockman could do that. And I hear raindrops keep pouring out of my head.
BJ Thomas.
BJ Thomas is a one take wonder. But the name like BJ, he better.
Rick?
With a name like Thomas.
Oh, wow. I'm waiting. All right. So next on the Hit Parade is this record that was done for Virginia City.
Yes.
So that was, what was
it
called?
I was just there.
Yes, it was called The Songs and Legends of Virginia City. The quick... I'll say setup is one of the builders of the studio was a fellow, and he's in town to this day, Larry Elliott. When I met him, he was a magician known as the Amazing Elliott, but he also had a great musical career, and he still performs around town. And he was performing up at the Long Branch Saloon, and he wrote a song called The Legend of the Long Branch Saloon and played it for him. I said, I love that song. And I thought, you know, Virginia City needs to have an album. You know, I guess just the way Reno needs to have a recording studio, now Virginia City has got to have an album. You know, I can't leave well enough alone. So he and I got together and we did some research and we did an entire album, a song about Mark Twain, a song about Julius C. Bulette.
Nice. I'm a clamper, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, there you go. The Virginia City Reel. We had many, you know, things. And so one song that Larry wrote, that we collaborated a little bit on, but I'm going to give him most of the credit on this, was a song called The Pick and Shovel Rag, which is an amazing tune. And Larry was good friends with Freddie Powers at the time. And Freddie
was known songwriter for Willie Nelson and some of the biggest names in country.
Yes. And at the time, wow. Willie was playing many weeks at a time at Fitzgerald's.
Okay.
He had a great little band, and Larry brought him into the studio, and they just kind of cut this track pretty live, as a matter of fact. And Freddie actually did some vocals on it. So we can go ahead and play that track.
Pick and Shovel Rag.
Down the line.
everybody's doing the pick and shovel rag.
All right, boys, yeah.
By candlelight, we dynamite. Dust would settle, then we'd fight to move that whore to the pick and shovel rag. Well, move that shovel, swing that pick. I've been digging on the graveyard shift, working my fingers to the bone. 8 hours done, it's time to go home. But first, a drink in 10 saloons. Dance with the honeys to a ragtime tune. Back through the mine and the pick and shovel rag.
If they could see the choreography we're doing in here. Huh? Talked over the tag, dude.
And I would have edited that out had you not said something.
Interestingly, this was pretty much done on the fly. I mean, Freddie showed up with Larry and just kind of ran through the song with the band, and they just like cut this.
Damn.
And it's like a brilliant.
That's some screaming arranged, playing right there.
Yeah. And they had it together. They just like, okay, we get it, and they just put it together. Everybody, the banjo player knew what to do. They all knew what they were going to do.
Yeah.
And they just did it.
Was this Freddie's band?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So that's why they were such a tight-knit unit.
They were, yeah.
I love Dixieland and ragtime and crap like that so much. And there's no place you can go see that today.
Yeah, especially not in Reno.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you go to New Orleans.
They closed Farrell's. So.
Yeah, I'm not going to try to bring that back to Reno.
Could you? I will show up to watch that.
As a side note, I have a story about working with Freddie. Freddie and I did a song together with Willie Nelson, Merle Haggard, Johnny Rodriguez, and another local Reno producer, Jody Peterson, at Granny's for a song for the Special Olympics.
Oh, wow.
It was called Everyone Has a Chance to Win That. Unfortunately, is in legal limbo and can't be played, which is a drag. But so Freddie wrote this great song, and we had all these big names in country come do this song, and I got to engineer it. And I can safely say I've turned down marijuana from two of the best sources in the music industry, Willie Nelson and Dr. Dre. And we're working on this song, and Freddie talks like this. You know, he's really... How's it going, Tom? And it's almost, forget it. I can't think of the person. But so Willie shows up.
Harvey Fierstein?
Gilbert Gottfried?
No, Carol Channing.
Oh, there you go. Nice.
That was even meaner, Tom.
Nobody saw that coming.
Yeah. The male. It sounded more like.
Diamonds.
We were thinking Gabby Hayes.
Yeah, right.
Well, believe it or not, we've actually referenced Carol Channing before on the show.
Oh, fantastic.
Well, about a year and a half ago.
Hello, Dolly. Fantastic.
Anyway, continue.
So I'm there mixing the song in this, we had to have it done in like record time. And I could hear Willie say, behind me to Freddie going, "Does the boy smoke?" And Freddie goes, "I don't know. I haven't asked him."
Did you start sweating?
So Freddie comes up and just puts the hand out if I wanted to partake. I'm like, "No, I got to keep my ears on for the recording." And he's like, "Okay." So they were very polite about it.
Yeah, that's good.
Tom, they weren't
pushy. Like, no. Come on.
Your standard line should be, "That stunts your growth."
Wow. Why didn't I think of that earlier? Good job. That's really good. Okay. So, wow, that was good. So just to keep things going here, because I know I don't want to run the same thing I did last year.
Kind of, oh, you're going to, and we don't mind.
Okay. Poor Nick is falling asleep.
I know, you should see Spencer. We should give him something to do.
Yeah, no.
Now stop that.
Where's In-N-Out? Burger.
Yeah.
He'll do it. Good catch.
Does anybody want fries or anything? No.
Okay.
T-Boy. Okay.
So, Dr. Davis, you can kind of fill us in on the transition from Axe Tracks to Imaraj.
Well, it happens to do with Tom. So, long story short, in 1984, George Orwell, no, sorry,
Van Halen,
84. I was still the chief head engineer, and I did some sweeping at the studio.
Where were you, Spencer? Come on.
Yeah.
And a band came in called Ultimate Dilemma. And my policy at the studio was, even the lowliest garage band, not that Ultimate Dilemma was the lowliest.
Slut fungus.
But they might have seen a garage. with that, they were treated like the Beatles. I mean, it was star treatment all the way. You know, you came into my studio and you would be a star. And we had a popcorn machine and I would bring, soda pop in or whatever. And I was very, very customer service oriented. So this band came in, and Tom was the drummer. Tom, you were, 15 at the time?
15, yeah.
Wow.
And Tom
were
came in.
Were you still
in,
like 6?
I was 6'4".
Oh, 6'4".
Yeah. Wow. And he was still able to clear the doorway.
Yeah.
And
back when I was 6'4".
Yeah. So Tom came in, and he had a large drum set. I remember there's many drums happening there.
I liked Rush.
And so he came in, and when we did our setup, after I ran all the wires and everything and we started getting tones, and usually I would start with the drums. So I was like, "Okay, Tom, let's hear the kick." And first I'm listening to make sure I had placed the microphone right, make sure I had picked a microphone I liked for that, and try to appreciate the studio space. And it was a little noisy. There's some little rattling. Okay, let's hear the snare. And boy, it was not that good. And then let's hear I was like, "Tom, hold on for a second." And I went out there and I listened to his drums, and there's just a lot of rattles. And it wouldn't matter in a live performance, but in a studio setting, you get the microphone right on the drum.
Sure.
And I said, "You know what? I'm going to fix this." And went out and found a new use for duct tape. And I took he hit the drums, and we meticulously went through till he had no rattles. That was a pristine sounding drum set. And then we got his tones, and then we got the band going, whatever. And but Tom had this is the second time Tom had been in a recording studio, and some things happened that made an impression on Tom, and I will turn it over to Tom now.
Well, I didn't know what a punch was. You know, that's where you record, and then if you screw up, you can go back a little bit and go and record and pick up where you left off. Mm-hmm. And it's voodoo if you've never experienced that before. And Dr. Davis had us fix an ending. So we wound, hit play, we got through the song to a point, and he goes, "Well, that ending was kind of loose." So he played it back for us, hit record, and we fixed the ending, and it was seamless. And I thought, what black art is required to make
you're a warlock.
Right. And then the song itself required some wind chimes. So I had some wind chimes, and So I it was this big swirly thing. And he's like, well, we're going to do another pass on the chimes. I'm like, all right. So he recorded the chimes twice and panned them hard left and right. So it was in stereo. It's like your head was swimming in chimes.
Wow.
I nearly had pink kittens. I was so excited.
And you thought chiropractic was voodoo.
Right. Right. So, you know, I was just like dumbfounded. The thing was, though, I was this Rush head. Neil Peart and I have the same birthday. I'm very proud to say that.
Oh, wow.
September 12th.
I didn't realize that. That's awesome.
So I had this drum set the size of the space shuttle that's now swaddled in duct tape. And so it wouldn't vibrate. And we're doing the pop music. And I'm doing like Rush fills everywhere, just totally overplaying the hell out of it. And
you were young.
Yes, and excitable and yeah, the whole nine. So we finished this take, and I just actually found a very bad cassette of it yesterday. I was playing some good stuff, actually. I was kind of surprised. But it was overkill for the song. He hits the talkback mic after one of the passes and says something that has been the running joke to this day. He says, Ringo Starr wouldn't put a fill there. And I just look at the, who is this guy? Ringo Starr sucks. I'm worried about Neil. Not knowing anything about the musicality of the playing of Ringo Starr that I do know now, but back then I was like, he doesn't play fills, period. What are you talking about? So what was Ringo's rule?
That it's funny, just probably a week before that session, I had never in my life read Drummer Magazine because I'm a guitar player. And my drumming will attest to that. And Ringo was on the cover. Okay, so I'm a Beatles fan and I buy Drummer Magazine because Ringo's on the cover and he's talking about his drumming secrets. And his secret was he would never play a fill if John or Paul were singing. I don't know what that means about George's singing, but if John or Paul were singing, he would. And I listened back to my Beatle tracks, and sure enough, whenever those guys were singing, there was never a fill. Like, wow. So that kind of stuck in my head. So the leader of the group, he was probably 21 at the time, Wayne.
Yeah.
So Wayne's singing. You know, he's doing his vocals, and Tom's just is going around. Roto Tom's flying all over, and I was feeling a little sorry for the singer because he was, you know, and maybe that didn't bother him, but it bothered me from a producing standpoint.
Yeah.
And one thing that Tom will, you know, say also is usually when bands show up in the studio, they don't have a producer; they just book the time. They're basically trying to produce themselves, and they don't always have a lot of feel for that. And so the engineer always becomes the default producer anyway. And I just accepted that bands were coming in, a lot of the garage bands, and I would just try to get them the best product I could. And I would do these little tricks, you know, the stereo wind chimes or whatever it would be, that to add a little production value to what they were doing or to try to get them tighter. Because what Tom was talking about is the entire band was playing and I punched in the entire band. It wasn't just one track.
Right.
It was like, I said, okay, guys, play the song again starting from the end. And I waited till, and then I punched it in at the spot there and it was the entire band got punched in, and I think that was more voodoo.
Yeah, yeah. And there was no idea. And you know, you can make those kinds of edits in computer programs day and night now, but that machine is not known for its most elegant punching, even though he had the mod to do it. You know, it's really tricky, and I, of course, 15, I didn't know that either, but I was like,
So you couldn't line up the waveforms?
Nope.
Not right.
Had well, be played in right. In your ear, you could.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. As usual, when Tom comes in to visit with us, we went a little bit over, so we had to break the show into two parts. We are ending part one now with the beautiful sounds of Cranium from the very first Emirage session that Tom is just about to tell us about in the beginning of part two.